Chapter 6. Damocles Starport, Terror. The chainsword cycled down to silence. Kestros kept his eyes on the entrances of the lift shaft. He pulled the empty magazine free of his bolt pistol and snapped a fresh one in place. The ammo counter chimed, and a rune flashed green in the corner of his helmet display. The empty magazine clanged off the support girders and walls of the shaft as it dropped down into the dark. Blood splatter covered half his view, but with infrasight he could see straight through it. The rest of his squad were yellow silhouettes of armor above and below him. The drying blood coating the lift shaft was a cooling green against the cold black of the metal. A body, wedged in the nearest door, was still orange with warmth.
"Nothing showing on all specs," said one of his squad over the vox. "Levels of hallucinogen are dropping."
"Oh, very well. We're dropping in 10 seconds. Stand by."
He gunned the chainsword once. Clotting blood and scraps of skin sprayed free of the teeth. It had been 20 hours since the company had dropped onto Damocles Starport. He had been fighting without cease from the moment he had leapt from the gunship's assault ramp. A wave of cargo loaders and menials had met them in a frenzied wave, and from that point he and his brothers had been hacking and shooting without respite. They had held the landing pads until heavier gunships had dropped prefab defense lines and more warriors. Then they had begun to drive inwards, into the guts of the starport. Screams had filled its corridors. Bodies had strewn its floors, and blood daubed its walls. They found no one sane. Hordes of humans would break from tearing at each other and charge onto the Imperial Fist's guns. They did not respond to threats or words, and after a while the order went out to engage without hesitation. The retaking of the starport had become a purge. That bloody task was still underway.
"Oh, this is not war," he thought. "This is butchery."
Kestros closed his eyes for a second and flexed his fingers on the grips of his weapons.
"Drop on my lead,"
he said, and fixed his gaze on the abyss below.
"Drop!"
He stepped off the ledge into the darkness of the shaft. Gravity yanked him down. Girders and doorways rushed past. The black pit beneath him grew. Voices roared around him, booming from vox horns in the open mouths of passing corridors. He saw light from an open door shining across the floor at the bottom of the shaft. He triggered his jump pack for an instant. Flames lit the dark, and force snapped through him as his speed vanished. Light flared above him as his brothers triggered their own packs. He landed on the rockcrete floor at the bottom of the lift shaft and came up firing. The doors vanished in a wall of detonations. Kestros bounded through. His visor lit with target runes, he fired, recoil hammering back into his hand. The first figure came out of the smoke. Its body was a red blur of heat, the chain in its hands cold blue. He let the swing come, stepped into it, and brought the chainsword up in a cut that split the attacker from groin to crown. He ran on, taking another two figures as they came at him. His squad were already through the door, their guns finding targets, hammering shells into bodies. The sounds of madness and slaughter reached up and filled the chamber's high roof. He blinked, his visor to full sight. Through the gunsmoke, he could see the shapes of macro haulers lined up across the space. A mass of debris lay across the back of three of them, and twisted remains of girders hung from the roof above. Bodies carpeted the floor. The air was vibrating with the distorted shout of the vox horns. Movement twitched at the edge of his sight.
"Take the gantries,"
he called, his voice a rasp, as he hacked through another flailing figure. Four of the squad triggered their jump packs and boosted through the air. They landed on the network of gantries high above and began to fire downwards.
"Brother Sergeant,"
called one of them.
"There is..."
He heard the thump of the missile launching and twisted to look up in time to see the ceiling explode. Two more missiles struck, a blink between each of them. The gantries fell. Kestros leapt to the side, struck the ground, rolled, and fired his jump pack as he came up. The wreckage hit the floor. A fuel cell in one of the haulers ruptured, and a fist of fire thumped into the air. The blast batted Kestros aside. Damage runes flashed in his eyes. Gunfire rattled into the air, hard rounds loosed in bursts. His head was spinning as he tumbled through the air, thrusters still firing. The purge had been bloody, and they had faced humans prepared to kill anything they found in any way they could. But this was different. This was not madness. He cut the jump pack and tucked into a ball as he fell. He hit the side of a macro hauler, and the impact ripped through the skin of its cargo container. His armor screamed. His left pauldron tore away. Servos burned out as they tried to absorb the impact. He felt bones break. He uncurled and leapt up through the hole he had ripped into the hauler. There was another percussive boom, and a missile struck the cargo container where he had fallen. Shrapnel clattered off his armor. The runes of his squad brothers were distorted yellow in his visor. He could see the enemy now, a cluster of figures moving behind cover. His eyes took in their breathe masks, weapons and movements.
Trained, he thought. Dangerous for humans.
He shot two of them before they could raise their weapons. At his back, three of his squad landed and fell into an arrow behind him. They ran forwards, clearing debris, bodies and crates in fluid bounds. He felt the drum beat of hard rounds clattering against his armor. He saw the real threat almost too late. Two figures crouched behind a mound of crates, their missile launchers leveled at him as he came from the clouds of smoke and dust. He fired again and jinked to the side a second later. The shell hit the launcher as the missile's propellant ignited in the tube. A wave of shrapnel ripped the second shooter apart just as the missile roared into the air. The explosion burst above his head. The silence was sudden, as though the noise had been sliced away with a knife. The haze of Kestrel's helmet display showed only the rolling clouds of smoke. Nothing else moved. Targeting runes searched for threats and found none. Kestrel blinked back to infrasight, but cooling greens and blues painted the world. The heat from the fires rippled in red, but besides his brothers, no warm blood beat in the chamber. He walked over to the nearest enemy, or what remained of them. They were simple human stock, fit but unexceptional. What was exceptional was that in all the hundreds they had butchered as they descended through the starport, these were the only ones who had not acted from madness. Slowly he reached down and pulled the breathe mask off the corpse. The face beneath was slack. Terran trade cartel brands covered the neck and lower lip, he noticed. He recognized the geometric design of the Heisen cartel seal. The noise coming from the vox horns finally fell silent.
Sergeant,
came a voice from behind him. He rose and turned. His squad brother's armor was dented and dotted with impact marks.
Oh, yes, brother,
he said.
Area's clear. We have three casualties, no fatalities.
Kestros nodded. He breathed out.
We'll make ready to withdraw,
he said, looking back down to the corpse at his feet.
We're done here.
A holding force,
began the other warrior, but Kestros cut the question off.
They can send auxilia or militia to deal with this slaughterhouse.
He paused and looked at his left fambrace. A thick coat of drying blood hid the yellow ceramite. On the ground further away, he saw a severed arm, still wrapped in the tattered uniform of the starport's militia.
Our duty here is done.
He gave a small shake of his head, but if his brother noticed, he said nothing. He glanced at the corpse with the cartel tattoos on its neck and dropped the rebreather beside it. Bab Bastion, the Imperial Palace, Terra. The corpses lay in darkness. Arcamus crossed the vault slowly, his bionics clicking and hissing. Ghost pain ran up and down the pistons that had once been muscle. It had been constant since the encounter in the investiture. Flesh that had never had a chance to grow old ached as he moved. It was not tiredness, even though he had not rested since the night of the attack. No, it was something else. An echo of a thought escaping the control of his will. He had not seen the Primarch since the attack. The sun had turned through the sky, but the orders from the Praetorian had come via others. Where Dawn was, and what he was doing, remained unknown to the master of his bodyguard. That did not concern Arcamus, though. The Primarch often was concerned with affairs that Arcamus knew nothing about. No, What worried Arcamus was that Dawn had now called for him, and him alone. That was what itched at the back of his skull as he walked towards the dead. Stasis fields enclosed the granite blocks that the corpses lay on. As Arcamus approached, he could see the remains under the layers of cold light. A charred hand, its fingers curled into a claw, a bare torso, the ragged edges of its meat weeping frozen beads of blood, an exploded skull laid out in wet fragments. Armor plates and weapons lay beside them, arranged like grave goods beside warriors from a less enlightened age.
Do we truly live in an age of enlightenment anymore?
He wondered, as he stepped into the cold glow around the stasis fields. He looked down at the nearest slab. A collection of limbs and lumps of burned flesh lay in the rough shape of a corpse. Three bolt shells had hit it in the chest, one after another, in a neat line from gut to neck. The rest of the damage had come from the corpse being in the blast radius of a demolition charge. Even torn to shreds, it was clear what the corpse had been when it lived. It was a space marine.
What do you see?
Dawn's voice came from the dark beyond the glow of the stasis fields. Arcamus moved on, not answering straight away, knowing that while a reply was required, it was also expected that his response be a considered one. Arcamus frowned at the remains nearest him, and then glanced at the others.
These are the dead we took from the investiture. An infiltration and sabotage team. 6 members in all. Light armaments and armor, he said. But what else do you see? Asked Dawn, closer but still not within the circle of light.
Arcamus leaned closer to the corpse that had caused his frown. All that was left of it was the torso, which sat on the granite like a butchered portion of meat.
This one has signs of slight muscle atrophy, he said,
leaning his head to change the angle of his view.
If the others were intact, I'm guessing they would show the same. In our kind, that might be the result of a bioweapon or some malfunction of gene seed. But that's not likely.
He straightened up.
The damage was from long-term hibernation in a Sus-An coma. They were asleep here on Terra. They were woken for this task.
And? Said Dawn, stepping closer. The pale light catching the sharp edges of his face and the eagle heads carved into his armor.
Beyond that, what do you see? This was planned a long time ago. The routes in, the layout of the palace, the coordination of different assets to enact multiple operations at the same time. This is not something that was thrown together. This was laid down years ago. Before the war even began, perhaps.
Dawn stepped up next to the slab. In the cold light, his armor seemed silver, his hair the white of frost.
They had time, said Dawn softly. They had all the time they would need to prepare, to gather information, to plan. In the time before the massacre at Istvan, said Arcamus, while they wore the cloak of loyalty.
Dawn shook his head, eyes still fixed on the flesh and bone on the slab.
Before that, this is a treachery older than Istvan. But before Horus turned, what reason would the Alpha Legion have to plan an attack here on Terra? Every reason you can imagine, said Dawn, and turned away.
Arcamus watched him for the moment, but the Primarch did not add to his words. He looked back at the remains, a frown forming as he took in the details of grenade and ammunition harnesses.
What were they hoping to achieve? Asked Arcamus at last.
Dawn turned. Arcamus gestured across each of the slabs.
When the damage to our orbital defences will be repaired, the Damocles starport will be repopulated and returned to functionality. The riots will be quelled. The attack on the Vox network served only to mask the other attacks, and if anything, has alerted us to a weakness. What purpose was there in any of this? The purpose was to show that they could, growled Dawn.
Arcamus shook his head.
Well, there must be something else. Something they have gained by doing this.
Dorn glanced sharply at Arcamus, and then pointed at one of the bodies on the slabs. Of all of them, it was the most complete. Only its head was missing. Pieces of skull lay above the ragged stump of its neck. A piece of jaw and cheekbone hung from a shred of skin.
"Have you noted this one?"
Arcamus looked at it.
"Killed by an excellent shot," he said.
Dorn nodded, but his face remained fixed.
"A shot I did not make," said Dorn. "I know where each of the others took their targets and how they fell. This kill was not mine."
"A lucky shot by one of us with the blind grenade fog?"
Dorn shook his head.
"This was a clean and deliberate kill."
Arcamus looked at the corpse again, his eyes moving across the shards of skull laid out where the head should have been. He blinked, allowing his eyes to find details. After a minute, he nodded and let out a long breath.
"Well, the shell was not explosive."
"Quicksilver," agreed Dorn.
"And it entered just above the jaw and blew out the crown of the skull with the initial impact."
He turned to one of the other plinths and gestured at it. Servitor eyes saw the movement from where they watched at the chamber's edge, and the stasis field vanished. Blood began to ooze across the stone from the chunks of flesh. Arcamus picked up the bolter that lay on the slab beside the remains. He gestured again, and the field blinked back into being. He turned the bolter over, snapped the clip out, and clicked the topmost shell free.
"Stalker rounds," he said, holding one up.
"Neither I nor the Huskarls were using such ammunition during the battle," said Dorn.
"So this one,"
Arcamus nodded at the headless corpse,
"was killed by one of his own."
Dorn gave a single nod.
"And that means that not all of them died in the investiture,"
said Arcamus, looking down at the shell in his hand. The brass casing and polished tip gleamed in the cold light.
"One of them escaped and killed his brother in the process."
"Brotherhood is a term that does not apply to the 20th Legion," growled Dorn.
Arcamus was still looking at the shell.
"This was not panic. This was an execution. Whoever did this is here on Terra, and they killed their own to ensure that they went alone."
He looked up at Dorn.
"Why?"
asked Arcamus. For a second, he thought he saw a glimmer of sorrow in the Primarch's face. Dorn reached out and took both bolter and shell gently from Arcamus. He slid the shell back into the magazine, loaded the weapon, gestured, and replaced it beneath a stasis field.
"What is going to happen is not going to be easy," said Dorn. "I am sorry that it must be you. You are the last of my first sons, and I would have preferred that another take the burden that you must carry."
He paused and breathed out slowly.
"There is something I must ask you to do for me, my friend."
"Of course, Lord. Your will is my..." "There is no need for formalities here, not now. Not with what I am going to ask of you."
"Request or order, they're the same to me, Lord."
Dorn gave him a long look and then nodded slowly.
"You are right. This is the beginning of something. There are greater wheels turning the fate of this war, but I cannot ignore what has happened. Neither can I fight it as I would like." He paused. "I need you to defend the Legion and Terra. I need you to be a Praetorian, two Praetorians."
"Have I not always been that, Lord?"
replied Arcamus.
Southern Refuse Sprawl, Terra. The air that touched Silonius's face was cold and smelt of burning refuse and rotting waste. He stood for a moment and breathed deeply, letting the scents fill his nose and the cold his lungs. Heaps of smouldering rubbish loomed above him. Smoke coiled from their sides, and the daylight falling through the pollution layer was yellow and rotten. The crevasse behind him led down through a maze of rock into the collapsed strata of Terra's history. It had taken him 2 days to make his way down through the palace to the Forgotten Door. He had moved quickly at first, relying on speed and the chaos of the moment to protect him. Later, as the shock of the attack had drained away, he had moved more slowly, creeping and sliding through the edges of the security net that was clamping tight over the palace. Then he had gone into the underworld and begun his journey up through the crushed cities and caves. He had needed to kill 4 times. Nothing challenging, but necessary if he was to reach his rendezvous on time. He had kept his armor, but shed the spent demolition equipment piece by piece. Some lay in the palace, some in the dark of the world beneath. He took another breath. He was somewhere in the midden heaps, south of the parapets of the Dawalagari prospect. Not his preferred surfacing point, but acceptable. He would be able to reach his primary rendezvous if he made good time. He pulled out the labor brute's robe that he had worn to move through the palace and pulled it on over his armor. Within 0.5 kilometer, it would be so daubed with ash and refuse slime that he would seem like one of the scrap hunters. He checked the direction of the light and then began to lope across the burning ground. Bab Bastion, the Imperial Palace, Terra. The wind cut across the roof of the world. On the parapet of the Bab Bastion, Arcamus watched as the glow of the sun began to sink behind a thick layer of cloud. There was ice in the air and the taste of snow. He thought of Inwit and the winds driving the snow from the night. Dawn stood beside him, hands on the stone of the parapet. Both of them were armored, and their cloaks rippled and furled in the wind. The tower top was deserted apart from them, and neither had spoken since they had left the vaults far beneath.
"You must do this alone," said Dawn, without looking away from the line of light on the horizon. "You may claim whatever resources you need with my authority, but the knowledge of whom and what you hunt will remain with you, and only you."
Arcamus was silent.
"Speak your thoughts," said Dawn.
"That will make it difficult to discover what the Alpha Legion intend. Knowledge defeats secrecy. We should cut the ground away from under them. There should be no place for them to hide. Every door they try should be barred, every weakness made strong."
"A good way, but for this it cannot serve."
Dawn paused and looked down at where his hand rested on the stone of the parapet.
"Tell me, what did you feel when this began?"
"When the Primogenia exploded."
Arcamus felt his words catch as an echo of that instant shuddered through him.
"When the alarms sounded, there was a moment when I thought that it might be real, that we might have lost before we even began to fight."
Dawn gave a short, bitter laugh.
"Clever, is it not? Clever and vile."
Arcamus saw the lines of his lord's jaw harden.
"Such are we that in this art of war are like unto serpents, to lie out of sight, to strike swift, to carry such poison in our mouths that men fear to tread where we may lie." "My father once quoted those words to me when I asked him of the 20th Legion's ways of war. The true threat is not what they plan or what they will do, but what the questions will do to us."
"I understand," said Arcamus.
He felt suddenly cold, as though a ball of ice were growing in his guts. Dawn watched him for a second and nodded.
"Remember what you felt when the attack began. Remember the shock. Remember the way that your instincts, good instincts, pulled you to act, to see threats that were not there. That is Alpharius's way, and the way of his legion. They are the shadow of a monster thrown on a wall, made greater by fear. As soon as you know they are there, you begin to look for them, to wonder what they might be doing, what their end might be.
You see shadows and believe them real. And then you begin to doubt your eyes and ears. And then the true threat appears, and it is too late.
And so none can know they were here, or are here still, said Arcamus carefully.
Phantom shivers ran up and down his bionic limbs.
My brother was cradled in lies, said Dorn. Begin to think about what he is doing, and you hand him his greatest weapon. This is his doing, even if others strike for him. His sons are the same. They have many heads, but all carrying the same venom.
Dorn was still watching him.
But I cannot allow the threat to pass. Clever and vile indeed. Find whatever forces the Alpha Legion have left in the system. Uncover what they intend and keep their poison from crippling us. That is what I ask of you, Arcamus.
You speak of poison. Do you trust me not to succumb to it?
Dorn put a hand on Arcamus' shoulder.
There is no other that it would have pained me more to see take this burden, and no other that I would trust more to see it done.
Arcamus bowed his head. He suddenly felt very tired.
I will do this duty for you, Lord.
Thank you, old friend. This is not the war I raised you to.
But I cannot do this alone. I'm a warrior and architect, not a hunter of shadows, and I have grown old as both. I will need help.
Do what you need to do, said Dorn, then fell into silence.
The daylight was a molten red and yellow blaze beyond the tops of the mountains and the towers of the palace. Arcamus shook his head slowly. Dorn glanced up at the movement, eyebrow raised in question.
Why did they do it this way? Asked Arcamus. Why show their hand? They could have pursued whatever comes next and remained completely undetected. Instead, they have shown their presence. It is almost as though they want us to face them, as though they wish the contest.
Because this is not about winning, said Dorn, his voice suddenly tired.
He blinked and ran his fingers across his eyes.
It is not about winning, and it never was. It is about pride.
Southern refuse sprawl terror.
We will have to go soon, grumbled Incarnus.
Miss Madra shot him a look, but the savant was staring up at the sky. Around them, the cargo lighter buzzed as its engines grumbled in low register.
We are still within the window, said Fokron from the bottom of the ramp. We wait until the allotted time has passed.
Incarnus flinched, but did not reply. One of the five legionnaires had split off from the team just after they had moved out from the signal tower. None of the others had said anything to him or questioned why he was going, accepting that the lone warrior's mission was now different from theirs. And just as one of their number left, now they waited for another to join them. Miss Madra let out a breath and went back to watching the horizon. The light was draining from the sky, and the layers of pollution were turning the last of it into a molten glow that caught in the tops of the spoil heaps. The skies of Terra were bare. Aircraft and transatmospheric shuttles normally sliced the air into shards with the wash from their wings, but now only a few circled in the lower reaches, like sullen carrion over a wounded beast. Most of them would be warplanes of the Imperial Fists and its auxilia. Perhaps even the fire condors of the Legio Custodes were abroad, watching for prey, ready to strike.
Whoever it is, they missed the first rendezvous, hissed Ashul from the lighter's cockpit. Got to put their chances at low.
There could be any number of reasons for them missing the primary rendezvous,
replied Miss Madra, watching Fokron carefully. He crouched in the shadow of the lighter's fuselage, weapon ready, eyes fixed on the folds of the land around them. Heaps of refuse extended away in every direction, rising as high as hills, oozing steam into the dusk air. Streams of fouled liquid ran at the bottom of valleys. Crags of wreckage protruded from the peaks. In the distance, the tips of the Himalaya loomed like teeth. The rest of Fokron's team were scattered across the refuse piles around the lighter, still shapes in the growing gloom.
"Some poor souls live here," said Miss Madra, as much to herself as anyone else.
"What?"
asked Incarnus, glancing at her, puzzlement creasing his face.
"There are tribes of people who live out here. Thousands of them. Children are born and grow and die, and believe that the whole universe looks like this."
She paused.
"But there is nothing better."
"And?"
Incarnus arched a hairless eyebrow. She ignored it and did not elaborate. After a minute he rolled his neck, stretched and turned his eyes from her back to the darkening land.
"Whoever we are waiting for, they aren't coming,"
he muttered again, and then flinched as the sonic boom of an aircraft rolled over the land. Miss Madra tensed, but the echoes of the jet's passing faded. Flakes of ash and debris stirred in the downdraft as Hashul briefly cycled the engines up. They had picked the lighter up 50 kilometers east of the tower they had attacked. Hidden at the bottom of a gorge, it looked to be made of rust, but it flew just fine. Part of her wondered how long it had been there. Months? Years? More? She thought of the boxes buried under the surface of the top wastes, but then cut the thoughts off. There was a point at which questions led nowhere useful or safe. She had learned that lesson many times over since she had begun her service to the Legion.
"Time's almost up," said Incarnus beside her. "Were they mission critical?"
She shook her head, and was about to say something when Incarnus straightened, eyes fixed on the dark gathering at the bases of the refuse hills.
"Something is out there,"
he said.
"I can sense it."
Fokron raised his bolt gun, the muzzle aimed. Miss Madra squinted but could see nothing. Then she saw something moving across a slope. It was hunched and walked with a loping gait that reminded her of a maimed dog. She glanced at Incarnus, but his eyes were fixed on the thing coming towards them. The pupils had almost vanished in his eyes. A pearl of frost gathered at the corner of his left eye as he reached out with his mind.
"It's not human,"
he said, his voice a rasp. As though in answer to his words, Fokron's brothers rose, their guns levelled at the figure. The figure paused, its head cocked to one side under the fabric of its hood.
"What word do you bring?"
called Fokron. Another pause.
"Eurydice," said a voice. "And you?"
"Callisto," replied Fokron.
And then the warriors were running back across the slopes. The shrouded figure came with them, but now it was not limping, but moving with the same fluid strength as the rest. They reached the lighter and vaulted on board one by one, collapsing their watch on the hills until only Fokron remained. And then he was jumping onto the ramp, and the lighter was lifting from the ground in a scream of released power. The figure that had joined them stank of ash and foul water. He was a giant, as tall as Fokron, but the newcomer wore only a ragged shroud over form-fitting recon armor. He slipped the hood from his head. His features were the smooth sculpture of strength that many of the Legion bore, in direct echo of their Primarch.
"I am Silonius," said the newcomer.
The ground was racing past beneath them now, the air roaring through the hatch as it shut. Fokron pulled the helm from his head.
"You will call me Fokron," came the reply.
Beside her, Miss Madra felt Incarnus staring at the two warriors.
"Don't worry. You get used to half of them looking exactly the same," she said.
The lighter lurched, and terror dropped away beneath them. Battle Barge Alpha, the interstellar gulf beyond the light of Sol. The warships tumbled through the dark, spinning end over end with the momentum of the last thrust of their engines. No light shone within or without their hulls, and they had toppled through the void for long enough that ice clung to their bones. There were hundreds of them, some only half a kilometre from prow to stern, others vast cities of armour plating and weaponry. Seen from close enough that they were visible, but far enough that their shapes were hidden, they would have appeared as a cloud of debris, the remains of some ancient explosion or collision of moons. From a distance, at which their nature started to emerge, they became the corpses left by a storm or battle. The eye which moved close enough that it was weaving a path through the spinning hulls would have noticed that most were whole and unmarked. But even then, neither eye nor sensor would have seen anything but cold, dead metal. The largest ship was called the Alpha, and it was a metal mountain range studded with weaponry. In a chamber deep within her hull core, a stasis field blinked out of being. The field's generator had been sipping power for a year, draining its tiny reserves second by second until nothing was left. The amount of power in the reserve and the rate of drain from the stasis field had been calculated so that it would fail at that exact moment. The figure who had stood within the field completed the blink he had begun a year before. The chamber around him was suddenly empty and dark. A moment before, it had been filled with tech priests and servitors, and the air had buzzed with static and the click of machine code. Now his senses reached into blackness and found nothing. A blue rune lit in his helmet display. Cold. Fatal levels of cold. He stepped off the stasis plinth. The sound of his steps rippled back to him as echoes. He paused and let his mind adjust to a present that was utterly different from the past he had just left. He had entered the stasis field in the last phases of the fleet's preparation, but even at that stage the battle barge had been filled with noise and movement. Now there was nothing besides the sound of his own breathing and the glow of his helmet display. He began to walk, his steps echoes. There was no need to rush. He had all the time that he could want. The door out of the chamber had been left open for him. Without power, the pistons and locks would have held them shut to all but a melter blast. It was the same for each of the other hatchways and arches he moved through. He passed a servitor after an hour. It had frozen solid, midway through some task that it had tried to pursue, even as the dark and cold had closed around it. White frost crystals clogged its eyes and covered the exposed patches of its skin. He left it to its never-to-be-finished task and walked on. The hoists and lifts were inactive, so he ascended by stairs and ladders, rung by rung, meter by meter. The chamber in which he had woken was far from the ship's bridge. They had kept the bulkhead sealed, and so his path was through a labyrinth of vents. Dealing with counter-incursion traps also added time. There had been a minimal chance that anything would have been able to detect the systems running the stasis field, but they did not have to tolerate that possibility, and so they had buried him deep. It took him another hour to reach the command level. At last he dropped onto the bridge. It was utterly dark. Armored shutters blocked the view of the stars beyond. The ghosts of data stacks loomed in the silence. Rows of machine-wrapped servitors hung motionless on the walls of deep trenches running across the deck into the unclear distance. The empty command throne sat above him, skinned in ice, glinting in the light from his eye lenses. He moved across the chamber, finding the console he needed easily, even in the dark. It was powered down and cold, but its initial operation was physical. The crank handle filled the dark with the rattle of chains and gears. He kept turning until the machine resisted, and then turned a series of dials set into the console. Somewhere beneath the deck, a power reserve woke and began to siphon life into a very small number of systems. Lights flickered down in the machine canyons, and a trio of servitors twitched as fresh warm blood was pumped into their flesh. Out on the hull, a single communication array began to sift the emptiness for signals. It would not find any yet, but it was not expected to. It just needed to be awake and listening when the signals did come. The figure ascended the steps to the command throne and sat. It would be a long wait, But as he had just passed a year in the blink of an eye, a few weeks more were nothing. Besides, he would not be alone for all of that. There was a legion and armada to wake for war. But for now, the hollow silence and darkness would be his and his alone.